I just need to inform you that we have WGXC, the new radio station that's covering Greene County, doing a live feed. So all the things that you say will be heard by the public. So I need to forewarn you. And we welcome your new company, new radio station just started up like 2 weeks ago. And we welcome you to Greene County, and we welcome you here. Well, what intended to be a little get-together with us legislators and our elected representative has turned into be a summit. Now, I'm not really sure that this is a summit, but the intent here is to discuss some very, very important issues that are facing not only the county, but are facing our towns and municipalities. So it was decided to invite representatives of all our municipalities in Greene County, primarily to talk about the tax cap. The tax cap with relating to being achievable. Now, I'd like to start out by reading an editorial, and I don't usually read editorials too much, but this one caught my eye, and they're not my words, but the words here, but I think it reflects on all of us, some of our concerns. And it basically goes, and I won't read it all, but I'll read some of it. If Governor Cuomo is serious about his property tax cap, then he needs to get serious about giving local governments the flexibility to spend their money as they see best. And to make that point to his mandate relief redesign team. That group is set up to find ways to unshackle cities, towns, counties, and school districts from the costly state-imposed requirements. Released its preliminary report last Tuesday and proposed essentially no relief at all. Now, I have copies of that here. And I think I might have enough for each town to have one. It's a fairly lengthy report. But generally, what it does is addresses a lot of the issues, but it don't address the immediate accomplishment of the issues that are facing Greene County. So if each of you from each town would want one copy, they're up here on the front, and you'll find it interesting. I think it's like an 82-page report, and it addresses anything from the Wicks Law, which is strapping many of us, and especially our towns. I want to welcome Senator Seward, Assemblyman Lopez, and Assemblyman McLaughlin. Now, Assemblyman McLaughlin is really getting his feet wet. He's just started in January, so here we are. Listen, we're all facing tough times. We're all going to feel significant pain. Here in Greene County, on the legislative side, we actually started addressing these issues 3 years ago by cutting back our expenses where we could. Now we're at the end of the game of where we could really, really trim our budget without having serious impacts on our programs and the services we provide to the residents of Greene County. Now, we have a little overhead here, and we'll go through that just briefly, but this is pretty much pertaining to us in Greene County on the legislature. So with that, where's Mary Jo? Somebody flipping this up? Here's copies, gentlemen. All right, so you can take them with you. On the first column is a 2% spending increase. That's the amount of money that we would be limited to under the tax cap. Now, I might add, the task cap is not really the issue, because I know all of us as elected officials and leaders of our communities, we should be ultimately doing zero. But we put it up there for demonstration purposes of what 2% would relate to us in, on the legislature. So we would get, we would be able to increase our budget by 400,000. The next column shows what has, we have just received is a cut in our DSS department, 660,000. The next column, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more because I know that most of the town officials is having this problem, and that's the increase in retirement cost. That is not the retirement cost, that's the increase. The next column is the increase in health insurance. And now that's a rough guess. We don't have the numbers, but it's been trending about 10% a year. That's another 810,000. And the last column is Medicare 3% cut. So putting it in a column to show what a 2% tax cap does, then look at the total of all the other columns, that's where we're at. Pretty significant. Go to the next one. All right. This one I want to talk to a little bit, and maybe some of the town officials would like to talk to it on their impact. New York State retirement system. And we go back to 206, and we show what it cost for us to cover the retirement system for our employees. There's two colors here. One is the total, which is the tall one, and on the bottom is the blue. Now the blue represents what the employees contribute toward it. So basically what you see, if you go, and I know the numbers for 211, what we just paid, $2.7 million, $272,000 of it was received by, and contributed by employees. The rest of it was paid by taxpayers. And then you go to 12, and this is where the dilemma comes for all of us. It's a $1.2 million increase on top of this year to the retirement system. Now, through the whole process, and in the mandate relief book, they make the recommendation that they create a tier 6. That's all well and good. But none of you will have an impact on tier 6. Because it takes 10 years to get out of this cycle because an employee does not contribute to their retirement system after 10 years under the existing constitution. So it's good for a long range. It's very, very bad to address the needs today. My opinion, folks, is this is something that needs to be talked about more and more and more. Because if we continue not getting contributions, employee contributions, the bottom line is this is fluctuating so much that it's unsustainable. The only way that you get back to the 2% cap on a county level is you have to do away with services to our constituents. That's the bottom line. It's services and employees. And to this point, we have not had to do it. But from this point on, it looks like we need to take a look at our services that we provide in order to get all this money that's going to have to be paid out. Now, is there anybody here from the town who'd like to speak to that issue on retirement system and the impact that it's having on you? Vinny?
same impact that you're seeing there. I mean, different percentages. I mean, part of the failure is when the retirement was doing good because of the good investments in the 80s and the early 90s, we didn't bank that money. So part of this is, you know, part of this is us taking advantage of that windfall and not being prepared for it today, because that's really what this is. It's just retirement. We made bad investments, and now we pay for it.
Thanks for mentioning bad investments, because this is how they got there. They, when the stock market went down, they had all these investments. So what they did was they lost some money. And then what happened was, after they lost the money, they don't lose. That goes back to the local municipalities. So it's a no-lose situation for their bad investments. It's done on the backs of our taxpayers.
Wasn't it DiNapoli in charge of the retirement system?
He is the controller. It comes under the controller. Now, under this mandate relief, they show this in here with regards to the mandate relief, and it's not addressing it. And I've not heard anybody say, we've got to go back and do something about this. Because if you flip this chart to the next one, what you see is all those numbers put in perspective. These are impacts on the taxpayers for these programs. So you see the Department of Social Services, the $660,000 cut equals 3.3 on the tax levy. The retirement system is an additional 6.7% increase on the tax levy. The health insurance cost is another 4, and the 3% is 1.45 on the tax levy from the Medicare cost. Now, having said all that, the only way that you're going to get to zero, and that should be ultimately, I think that's all our goals, but even to get to the 2%, it's going to be really, really difficult unless we get mandate relief. You cannot keep dumping down to the local level. Listen, a 2% tax cap, it's good, all right? But you know what? When they put in the supermajority vote, where your board, is it two-thirds of the board? I'm not sure if that's the number. But if two-thirds of your board of education or your legislative body or your town board overrides, has a right to override that, guess who looks like the bad guy? We do. And do you think any of us want to do an override when the people are expecting it had that number put in their mind? No. So we're the bad guys. What we have done on the local level to curtail our expenses over the last 3 years since the downturn in 2008, they managed up there with no cuts. No layoffs. We're down 50 some employees in Greene County over the last 3 years through attrition. It's pretty significant. We're working a little harder, and we're working a lot. Well, actually, if you listen to the employees, they're working a lot harder, and they're right, and they're working smarter. So, having said all that, we have some significant challenges. Did it have any more overheads? Was that it? That's it. Well, I try to keep it pretty simple, but Vinny?
So what do those percentages mean to a taxpayer with a $100,000 house? Do we have any numbers there? So everything's in percentages, but it's hard to put it in perspective of how that would...
Well, let's go back to the percentages again. And what was the sum of all those percentages, Mary Lou? So you're looking at 4, 5, 11, 12, 13, 14, close to 15%. 15% based on, these are numbers that we have. We don't know what's coming.
Right. But a $100,000 house, I wonder what they're going to wind up. If they got hit with this, they're paying, I'm making numbers up here, if they pay $1,000 a year, are they going to pay $2,000?
Well, basically they're going to pay another $150 if you use that number. It's $150 on a $100,000 house, right?
I don't know. Up here.
No. That can't be right.
Well, I don't know what the tax rate is in Casco, the county tax rate.
You don't know about the county.
Yeah, what the county tax rate is.
The county tax rate runs probably in the area of $550,000. So add 15 would be 15% of that. It would probably be a 50 to 60 cent hike. So on $1,000, that would be $60 a thousand. Am I right?
$6 a thousand.
Right. So $6 a thousand would probably be $60 or $70 on a $100,000 house. Okay. And don't hold me to those numbers, but you know, just off the top of my head. At this time, I'll let anybody who would like to speak from any of the towns speak.
Wayne, Paul Mack, I'm the supervisor of the town of Greenville. A lot of this problem with the state retirement system and the employees' contributions started 10, 11 years ago when the state came up with a plan that it said employees that have 10 years on the job no longer have to pay their portion into the retirement system. And I think what the state should be looking at is going back into a system where everybody pays for their whole career with the state. And I think we have to look at the possibility of police and fire paying something, the employees in police and fire paying something into their retirement. Now this year's police and fire contribution is 20% of payroll.
Next year is 24.1.
And your New York State Public Employees Retirement System this year is 11.2%. I don't know what that's going to be.
Next year it's 15.6.
So, I mean, when the system, like Vince said, when the system was doing well, they passed all these. And I worked for the state. I paid in for 19 years when they developed this plan where you didn't have to pay after 10 years. And what you actually saw in your take-home pay, the difference, you couldn't buy a cup of coffee. What you actually saw, the increase by taking that out. And maybe we have to increase it from 3% to 5% of payroll. For the employees, we have to do something to even out that scale.
If you've got 20-year employee retirement benefits next year, for every dollar that you pay in salary, it's $1.24.5 just in retirements.
Yeah. But you take these factors like state retirement, medical insurance, what you pay for workers' comp and your liability, and your workers' comp, your basic liability, medical insurance. Just about every town in the county here, a village in the county, is going to be hard pressed to work with these numbers. What I think this is geared around is it's really going to hurt the smaller towns and villages that have smaller budgets, because that with a $2 million budget, a 2% increase for me would be $40,000.
Yep, you're going to get basically proportionally the same thing.
We could spend $40,000 with just increases in our medical, our liability insurance, and our workers' comp.
And the increase in heat, an increase in utilities.
Nobody knows where your diesel, and fuel, and gas and
heat. You know, the cost of doing business day to day. Now listen, we have a golden opportunity here. And you know, I'm hearing the governor say some pretty good things. It's like very good things, actually, not pretty good, very good. I just hope that he's got the wherewithal to take advantage of this opportunity to address it. You know, quite frankly, when they come through with the stimulus money, all that did was prolong the agony to get to this day. We would have been to this day 2 years ago. It just postponed this time when there's no more stimulus money to fill the gaps. And there's going to be pain. There is no doubt about it. And I think as leaders, we know that. Is there anybody else from the town that would like to make a comment? I know you didn't come down here just to listen to me. Come on. And we had most of the towns here, I think, because this is really good. So that shows that there's some concern on your part. Any of my counterparts want to make any comments? Joe?
Mr. Chairman, I just want to mention one of the other things that we have is our community college.
Yep.
And I've been in contact since I'm chairman of the Education Committee with Mr. Campion, who's our president, and he has indicated, based on the proposed community college budgets, that he's possibly going to see close to a $488,000 decrease. And the potential for $488,000 decrease in state funding for the community college, and he has only a couple ways to make that up, and that is to either increase tuition and also the county shares. And in this case, if that holds true, then Greene County share of that will be an additional $224,000 over and above what we're paying this year, and not including any salary increases, any overhead increases that may affect the college. So he's very concerned. He again has sent a I'm sure that the our state representatives have gotten copies of it, an email indicating that they have held the line on full-time faculty. They've delayed various programs, and their enrollment is going up 12%. So their ability to give a quality education to our residents is starting now to thin out. And so I wanted to be able to mention that.
I should have put the bar up there. It would have been, Vinny, it only would have went from 15% to probably 18%, you know. So, I mean, and there's a lot of unknowns built in there. So, you know, by the end of the day, it may end up toward 25%, depending on where the budget cuts come from and what the budget is that's approved.
I hope that, you know, we're all here, and I hope that it's not just going to be a message out to the public, because we've got the press here, we've got the radio station here, that, you know, public's going to hear this tomorrow or hear some of it tonight, and they're going to go, I'm going to sell my house, because this is doom and gloom. It's not like, I think we need to have a session where maybe it's not, this is not the forum, but where we sit down as leaders of the community and have it out and say, how are we going to figure this out? Because, and maybe that's what tonight's purpose is, but I just hope we don't
just
leave here, that we just don't leave here saying doom and gloom, because people will just react negatively and say, this is, my taxes are going to go up 15, 20%. And I don't want to see that happen.
I think,
where do we go from here, is what I'm asking.
I think we have to start looking at working together, do some sharing of services. You know, on a county level, I suspect, you know, we got to get to this number and a little bit more. You know, it's going to impact our services, and it's going to impact that. Because I don't want the people, because we're number one, it's never our goal to increase taxes by 15, 20, or 30%. My God, the seniors haven't got a raise in 2 years. They're facing increase in their taxes. They're facing heating cost increases, gasoline costs, food increases. So, and they haven't received a cost of living, I think, in 2 years. And so our seniors are, they're struggling. And not only our seniors, all our people are. You know, you go get a tank of gas, what used to cost 40, 45, now costs 65 to 75. So, you know, I take mine, and when it gets half full, I fill it, so it don't look as bad. I don't wait till it gets to E.
So with talking about shared services, I mean, this has come up before, but let's start to really talk about what that means. And let's take a silly analogy. You know, is it going to be to the point where the county is going to have all the snowplows? Nobody else is going to have a snowplow, and that's going to save us money, because the county is now going to plow all the roads. And who is going to figure out if that saves money? I don't know that it will or not. I'm just using this as a maybe a silly example, but to prove my point of something as simple as snowplowing. Is that a shared service? And if it's not something we're willing to share, stop talking about it and put the next. Buying paper, is that the next thing? And then if the next thing after that, whatever.
How do we get to that point?
Well, I think we've kind of worked very hard with, when we do our bidding, that we allow our municipalities to purchase off our bidding, especially the heating fuel and gasoline for their trucks. Fire departments can purchase through our plan. I think that to get to where we have to get, we have to have a lot more dialogue over the next 6 to 8 weeks to get there. And I agree with you. Plows going over roads without the plow down is absolutely ludicrous. And I know that Jimmy is working on something to work closer with the towns to take a piece of this and you take a piece of this and however that works out. But we do have to have a dialogue. And we can have a dialogue as a group, and we probably have to have, sometimes have to have a dialogue individually with each town supervisor and each town board. I know that we're going to be meeting a few times over the next few weeks to see how we can get these numbers down, because our numbers certainly at the end of the day are a lot more than you, even though you have significant challenges. Our revenue stream is three places, mainly three places. It's sales tax, it's aid for our programs, it's property tax. And a property tax you can't increase, and certainly don't want to increase I lost my mind here. What is it? You don't want to increase property taxes, right? And aid's going down, and sales tax, we're $3 million below where we were 3 years ago, close to $3 million. And so what we need to do is we need to not lose sight that our businesses, if we're losing $3 million in the county on sales tax, that means our businesses aren't doing as good as they used to do. So we need to go out and we need to tell people how important it is to buy local, to buy their gas, to buy their clothes. Not that we have a lot of clothes outlets, but whatever they can purchase locally is important, because if they keep their sales tax in the county, ultimately it affects your property taxes. So, and we can't lose sight of the other side of the ledger, and that's how do we increase revenue? And revenue outside of taxes. People are taxed out. I mean, I saw numbers of where New York State is in taxes, and I mean, we're right there. I mean, we're at the top, and it's severely at the top. So it's going to be difficult. It's going to be painful. But I'm optimistic.
But we have to tie that to the services we give. I mean, just saying your taxes are high, the end of that conversation needs to be, what services do we provide? People, I believe, people are willing to pay a decent amount of taxes for a good set of services. You can't overtax them and give them nothing in return. And I actually think that we do a decent job. All of us, every town in here, does a decent job providing the best value for the dollar. We don't walk around with, you know, palaces for town halls or village halls. We have very meager surroundings. And I think, you know, we got to get that message back out to the people to say, this is what you're getting for the services that you pay. And maybe, just maybe, some of these, we can work with the public and they can give us ideas of what they're willing to give up to help us meet this 2% and all these other percentages we're talking about. Because it really comes down to them, not really us.
You got to prioritize what we do. Exactly. And, you know. go ahead, Joan.
I'd like to hear from the senator and the assemblyman as to what's going on with the state budget, because we're talking about things that may happen. And I'm not exactly sure. Maybe some of that won't happen. Maybe they have ideas or thoughts that are occurring in the state that we are not aware of.
Well, what I was going to do is I was trying to get most of our input, because they're writing a lot of notes.
You can respond. Talk at the end.
And I think that you can respond to the questions and the concerns. Is that okay, or do you want to?
No, that's fine. I was writing a resignation.
It's demanding a recount.
Yeah, it was funny. The radio station interviewed me this morning, and they said to me, "What about the elections in November?" And I go, "What are you talking about? What elections?" He says, "Well, the election's coming up and getting reelected." I says, "I don't know of anybody that's in a leadership position that worries about reelection. And if they are, if reelection becomes part of their decision, then maybe none of those people shouldn't be with us." And I'm not sure if those were the exact words, but it's kind of like that. Is there any other towns that would like to speak up?
I got some.
Harry?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Governor Cuomo is doing exactly what he heard on the campaign trail. The people of New York want him, and he is being accountable, to hold down their taxes, their fees, their expenses. And he is doing exactly what he promised he would do. It's our job, as we're doing of late, we've been meeting, to make that happen, to come up with ideas, just like you're telling all the town officials here, to think outside the box, come up with ideas. I know Vinnie Seely's saying, what are we going to do? Well, we're at that point now to try to come up with ideas. The governor has made it very clear, and quite frankly, I'm a strong supporter of the governor. He's made it very clear that there needs to be change. And you even said it yourself. You like what he's doing. So now it's up to us to come together and make the, I hate to say the word cuts, but think
tough
outside
decisions.
The box. Tough decisions. As you stated earlier, you shouldn't be in this position if you can't carry it out and go forward. I think we're going to hear shortly from the senator, and the senator is here, that they probably like, and I'm taking a guess here, what this governor is proposing. Because we finally got a governor that's accountable, and he's going to do exactly what he said he was going to do.
Thanks, Harry. Forrest?
Yeah, I want to touch back on the question about retirement. It was mentioned about our current comptroller, DiNapoli. We mentioned 11-year, probably at least 11-year history of how the system got where it is. The retirement system is considered protected, and it is written into the Constitution. The Constitution, though, was passed by the state legislature and then ratified. You, in the end, the senators and assemblymen present and those around the state, ultimately have control over that system, even though, and backing up to the comptroller is directed to operate it the way the legislature set it up through the Constitution and through the state laws. So he has no control. He can't choose to do something differently. He's directed to do it as is directed. That power lies back in the hands of the Assembly and the Senate. And I think the time is ripe, as was said even by you, I think, Wayne, that needs to be looked at again. And it's up to them to do so.
Thanks. Yes, sir.
Wayne, Dolph Schmendt, the town of Hunter. I think it's a great idea that the governor has. The problem is that running a town is like running a business. I run my own business. I mean, there's not a generic footprint for running a business. Not everybody's businesses has the same expenses. Some have long-time employees, some don't. Some have health insurance issues, some don't. So every town has a different issue. Some towns don't provide the same services as other towns. We in the town have to provide a lot of services, police, fire, and we do a lot. And so we can start taking things away from our taxpayers, but at what cost? Not to have an ambulance service, not to have a police department, not to have a highway department that takes care of everything, not to have new equipment that doesn't sit on the side of the road during a snowstorm. So, while yes, he wants a 2% tax, and it's great to say that to the general public, but then when the general public comes to your town board and says, why can't you do a 2%? That's what the governor wants. Well, we can't do it because we have these costs. Another town can't do it because they have day costs. So it's not a generic blanket statement for them to say, do this. We can't all do it. Some small towns can, some big towns can't. If we have a decline in property assessment or assessed valuation, or someone's fighting to come off the tax rolls, then we lose assessed valuation, and that impacts us big time. We've lost a lot over the last 3 or 4 years, Paul. on our mortgage taxes. But that's out of our control. It's through refinancing and the market. We've lost half of what we've allocated, I think, over the last few years, and we've had to drop our allocation by 50%, and that affects us quite a bit. So I'd like to see us have a 2% tax cap in our town, but is it realistic for every town to be able to afford to do that and still provide everything that we do for the town?
You're exactly right. Every town's unique. Even though we all operate some ways, everybody's got their own areas of where they can go to save money. And most of you have gone back and tried to do that, especially in this last budget cycle. And I'm not sure that there's any more there to get. You know, the bottom line is, if you do away with services, you do away with people. And doing away with the people and putting them in an unemployment line is not a lot of fun, quite frankly. And it's not something that we enjoy. And, but we're down to services and people, and that's not a good place to be. And unless we get some kind of relief, unless we get... Listen, Sally's here somewhere, is from the superintendent of Carroll, and she sat on a school board. When I sat on a school board, she was in Carroll and I was in Coxsackie. And please don't allow this to happen. Because I remember back when they did the same thing with the retirement system. And at that time, it was the teacher's retirement system. And they had increased it by a significant amount of money. And the school districts were going to get hit at that time with big increases. So they went back to the school districts and they said, this is what you can do. And I'm going to use some fudgy numbers here in a way that to give an illustration. Is your increase is $1 million this year to the retirement system. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll allow you to pay that to us over 5 or 6 years. Do you remember this, Sally? We'll allow you to pay this over 5 or 6 years, but we'll charge you 8% interest. And by the way, the $1 million, that's not going to be an expense to you this year, so we're also going to count that as part of the aid to reduce the aid to you, so you get credit for that. That's what they did. And when I got on the board at the time, the school district was paying a payment to the state on top of the regular retirement. We actually borrowed our own money. And I hope that that don't happen. I hope that idea, when it comes up, doesn't happen, because all we're doing is prolonging the agony. Is there any other towns that would like to speak?
Tommy? I have a question for you, Mr. Chairman. Even here in the town, in the county, if we do local, you know, the local and the town governments make the adjustments that we have to in order to keep it, you know, the local governments running. Have you called anybody from the federal level? Because it's fine and dandy, hypothetically, if everybody puts in more money towards their state pension, which is more money out of pocket. But federal health care coming down the pipe, that's another thing that's hitting us from the other side. That, I mean, we're sitting here trying to solve the problems in our, you know, local and state level. But, you know, what's happening in D.C.? I mean, they're coming down with people who are claiming more dependents under health care up to the age of 26. That's a significant increase that's hitting people who pay the taxes ultimately on all that also.
I'm glad you brought it up, because it wasn't on our graft. I don't think it was on our graft. But I'll tell you what the county just got hit with under the 26, extension of 26. We just got hit for an additional $168,000. And we think that number's kind of low, because a lot of the employees didn't really understand the program and they had a short window of time to sign up for it. But it was not in our budget, $168,000 on the health care bill that was passed in Washington.
And you had EPA mandates that sometimes.
Pardon?
EPA mandates, too, which come down from the federal level, unfunded.
Yeah.
Similarly, we're going through one with arsenic level, as is ARC bill, not the bill or county.
Chris.
Wayne, I'd like to go back to the pensions for a minute. As Supervisor Macko was saying, we went through a golden period where we really didn't pay much in for a number of years, and we certainly got spoiled in the process. And I think that's changed now. With my understanding, there's a minimum payment that every municipality is paying. If that's not the case, I think there should be some sort of a minimum payment that is done every year, regardless of the status of the fund. Historically, I think at least the state people will tell you we've been underneath the actuarial rate as to what the contribution should be. We haven't really exceeded that. But in the last decade, payouts have been considerably higher than expected as well. They've doubled over the last few years, which has put a lot of strain on the fund in addition to all the other problems. As far as investment policies go, I think that the fund is largely made up right now of profits from our investments over the years. So it's been pretty successful, that particular policy. It's probably more on a benefits issue where it's being strangled, much less than the revenue that's been generated through our investments and through the policies of the fund. But Wayne alluded to the borrowing process a few years ago, and that was kind of bizarre. It was really high, and that's come up again. There's an amortization proposal that's being put out there where towns and municipalities and counties can borrow against their contributions over the next couple of years and pay that off over a period of time. But again, the problem is they want to charge you an exorbitant interest rate. And I think right now they're talking like 5%. I think that's something that could really help us out if that interest rate could be reduced considerably or even eliminated until we've gotten through this crisis. I think that would be very beneficial to the county and all the other municipalities.
Thanks for pointing that out again, because that was a major issue back when I did it the last time, and it just delayed the pain. Joe?
Wayne, a couple of things I'd like to
emphasize with our state legislators is that in mandate relief, there are a couple things that I think that they could do, or at least try to do, is to appeal and rescind the Tri-Barrel Amendment, which affects negotiations, because in order for us to at least help towns and villages in contract negotiations and things like that, they need to have the ability to negotiate, not to be negotiated to, but to be negotiated for on behalf of their residents. The other thing is the Wicks Law.
Absolutely.
They could pass legislation now to take care of those two things, and that definitely would help villages and towns and counties as far as their costs right now. It's an immediate effect that they're going to have on all our towns and villages and counties.
Joe, thanks for pointing that out, Joe, because that's addressed in this mandate relief to a certain degree about the Wicks Law. This is what the Wicks Law basically does. It inflates your cost to do a project or any type of work in your communities because you have to pay prevailing wage, and you have to, then you get audited, and then they go through all kinds of documentation to make sure that you did, and if you didn't, you're going to get fined. But there's a bigger issue there other than that. It deprives our local business people to bid on jobs because they can't do this. They cannot bid on these jobs because I've seen it happen. A small company did a job and they bid it and they had to pay prevailing wage to their employees, which may be $28 to $30 an hour, and they were paying maybe $20 an hour. So those employees got accustomed to, and this small company got accustomed to making $30 an hour, and when the job was over, they went back to their 20 or whatever that number may be, And now he had a disgruntled employee. Let our local contractors have the ability to bid. If they can do it, the Wicks Law prevents that from happening. In this mandate relief, and please pick up a copy, one for each town. I think I might have enough. If I don't, you can get it off the website, but you better have a lot of paper in your computer because it's 82 pages long. But we'll make them up for you and send them out if we don't have enough. But please just take one per town because you'll find a lot of those things addressed in here. And it talks about raising the authority of towns. I think your spending authority is $20,000. And this is going to raise it to, they're projecting that you could do it to $50,000. But it's all in here, especially with a whole bunch of recommendations. But the bottom line is, gentlemen, this is not going to fill a gap over the next 2 years. This is long range, and there's nothing addressing the issues at hand. Anybody else? Susan, where are you? How's New Baltimore?
Well, I think we're struggling just like everybody else. One question I would have is, you mentioned health insurance, and I think that does affect all the towns here with the services we provide. And I know that in areas of the state, they're looking at creative ways to handle that. Tompkins County, for instance, came out with a creative way to handle health insurance, a consortium for all of the towns and villages within the county, and they actually saved money this year on their health insurance. So is that something that maybe the county could look at that could benefit all the towns and villages?
Susan, I think it was 3 years. Was that 3 years ago, Keith? 3 years ago, we went to all our bargaining units, of which we have six, and we had at that time six or seven different plans. And it's like if a Cadillac dealer knows you got to buy a Cadillac, they can charge you whatever they want for the insurance because they know you got to have for the car because they know you have to buy a Cadillac. So what we did is we went through the whole effort, put it all together, and our employees bought in. Our insurance, the intent was never to have less than what we had before. We saved $1 million. Is that, am I close?
The first year
we saved $1 million. But halfway through the year, do you know what the state did? They taxed us on it. The state is taxing us on our health insurance. $130,000 of $1 million savings went to the state for tax on health benefits. And I think the towns probably are paying. Are you paying a tax on it? It's probably built into, I think it's built into your policy costs, but there is a tax on health insurance, right, by the state? Duh. Let's see, who haven't we heard from? Catskill.
I think everything's pretty much been covered here. You know, I don't have anything more to say about it. You know, it's got a lot of good comments.
Corey's here. I'm glad to see you come all the way from Prattsville, Corey.
Yeah.
We've been a pretty good partner with our elected officials in the county with Prattsville and some of the issues he's had with landslides and bridges out and floods. And Corey's a good young supervisor. Corey, how's things in Prattsville?
Me and Jim is also here on the town board, and we have been talking about the same issues you guys are talking about here, about insurance, and we're going to try anything in our power, what we can do, except to take it. All we hear in our town is taxes. So we've been looking into a lot of options, some of the same ones you're looking into. So we're going to take the bull by the horns and do whatever it takes. So.
Thanks. Let's see, who have I? Oh, Gary, how's everything in Eastern?
We have the same problem as anybody else. In our last budget,
we went up $50,000 just for retirement and health care and you know, the insurance costs. And this coming year, our budget, we're going to have to cut back, probably have to charge our employees a percentage of their health care because it's skyrocketing, and we just can't absorb it anymore. We'll have to notify them in advance that it will be coming, but normally it's no charge at all. It's 100% paid by the town. So we're gonna have to think about 10-20%, and that even goes for myself, probably a little more of a percentage that I'd have to pay for mine. We have to decrease costs, and we're going to cut wherever we can. That goes for anybody, really.
Yep. Donnie?
Town of Coxsackie is in a process of, you want to call it, finding money to try to replace our equipment. We put Band-Aids on our equipment for so long, and now we're in a catch-22 with equipment. We can't get parts. And we had to buy equipment, vehicles, with all the other problems that other towns and municipalities have. So our problem is buying equipment and vehicles for our fire departments, our highway departments, and we're in a bind right there.
Okay.
I've got one more thing. Wayne. The one thing that we haven't really talked about, it affects the counties more than it affects the villages and towns, but it does trickle down to them, is our health care cost. The state keeps coming up with programs, good programs, early child intervention programs, community-based aging programs, public health programs. They start these programs, and they're great, and the counties follow through, and we establish a good rapport for treating our citizens. And then all of a sudden, the state says, well, we can't afford it anymore. And what's happening is that we have individuals that depend on our services. We're a rural county. We have aging that can't get out of their homes. We have young children that if we treat them correctly while they're young, it helps us, it helps them and their families in the long run. We have other programs, sexual transmitted disease programs for our young adults, and areas where those programs help us keep our employees from using some of the facilities that they use now, which costs us more money. And then if we don't provide health care, then the villages and the towns see dilapidated housing. They see people not taking care of their homes because they have to pay their health care costs. And the villages now got other problems. So this all trickles down. And the point I'm trying to make is when the state begins a program and when they start a program, they should do a cost-benefit analysis. You just cannot keep doing programs and then all of a sudden say, I can't afford it anymore, and now I'm going to cut it 10%, and now you, the municipality, which provides the service, because you see the patients, you see the clients, you got to tell them, I'm sorry, we don't have any more money. So I think if the state wants to start public health programs, then they should be able to look at it and say, can we really afford it? And get to a point where if they can't afford it, keep it at least at its current level so that we can keep serving those individuals. Because Governor Cuomo is not going to see my grandmother, who's 95 years old, with a public health nurse. So he's not going to feel the pain. State legislature is not going to feel the pain. Department heads in the state aren't going to feel the pain. It's us and the client that's going to feel the pain. And in regards to the pension plan, you know, we all have to work together. But towns and counties and villages don't control the pension plan. We have no control over those costs, yet they come down to us. We have no control over other services, and they come down to us. So I like what the governor's doing in some cases, but the governor has to realize that if he wants us to be a viable state, he's got to let us decide what we can do with what with our own money and how we can provide those services. Thank you.
Including allow us to go into maybe our own retirement system.
Yes.
Okay. One thing I failed to mention is through this whole process since 2008, our Department of Social Services has seen the need, and it's double-digit increases for the last 2 years, of services that we need to provide for those that don't have. It's really been a challenge. We have not, on the legislative side, our department heads and our non-bargaining units have gone 2 years without a salary increase. 2 years without a salary increase. And they're asked to do a lot more each year. We thank them for that. We know that it's not a reward for doing an exceptional job, and that's what we should be doing, rewarding exceptional jobs. But that's the avenue that we've taken. Now it's time that we may have to do some painful things, and we don't want to go there. Kyra, do you have anything to say? I mean, you got one of the biggest jobs in the county here with the issues with cutbacks and challenges.
Our folks at the front table. What's been very interesting about this whole thing is that the biggest hit in social services is really in the safety net program. Just so everybody in the room understands, the safety net program is really exclusive for New York State. There's no federal participating dollars. So I'm talking about single adults or adults without children. When you look at our state constitution, Article 17 talks about that and says that we need to provide these services. It's always been a partnership between the counties and the state, 50-50. We all swallowed that and realized this is a very large program. Now, all of a sudden, out of the blue, the county is going to be responsible for 70% of the cost. Now, that's a really tough pill to swallow when we're in the middle of a fiscal year, and this is our biggest growing caseload that we have. So these are people who have been on for 5 years. I don't have jobs to put them through. These are people who are sex offenders coming out of prison. It's the worst of the worst of the population, and I don't want to see them go underground, because as long as we know where they are, we can certainly help out. But once we start picking up this 70% of this program, what's going to start to happen? There's going to be a race to the bottom. So I think fundamentally, I feel like the state is turning the back on us with our most difficult population that we have.
Marie?
Yeah. I'm from Public Health, and thank you, Wayne, for that kind words about department heads. We are working as hard as we can, not filling positions, and no end in sight right away. We have several areas that are being affected. As far as Medicaid, we in public health, we expect about a $1,700 cut there related to revenue, because we are a managed care county. Excuse my back, I'm sorry. And we don't have straight Medicaid. So we're not looking at a huge area there. Medicare, if that's another whole story, and of course that's not affected by this one. With general public health work being restructured for state aid, as you know, last year we lost our reimbursement as of July of last year for the home care. That was considered optional service. We are a county with no hospital, and our public health nurses are out there providing all kinds of care. But on top of that, there'll be another state aid cut of $16,000. We will also lose all of our funding for Lyme disease. And we, at one time, and I'm not exactly sure right this minute, but we were number two in the state for Lyme disease. And we've lost all that funding. I have a report from Laura Churchill in Family Planning, and the biggest impact they feel will be with HIV counseling and reimbursement. There will be a decrease related to that.
And again, it's difficult to qualify. And there are several EI cuts, early intervention cuts. Much of our effect will be EI related, and I know we have some providers here that have come on their own will to tell their story if they have an opportunity. So that's really where we're standing with public health right now. So we're doing the best we can with what we have.
Lee, I'm sorry, I missed that.
Well, I would rather be answerable to the people of Athens who will come to the polls and vote us out of office if we're not responsible with our budgets. And we struggle very hard. This was my first year, and we had practically an austerity budget and kept our tax levy increase below 3%, which was very hard to do. So to get it down below, you know, another percent lower would have been irresponsible, to tell you the truth. So this 2% cap seems to be a bit arbitrary, and I don't know any of the details either, because I'm sure there's going to be some things that are exempt, so I'll wait to hear about that. But Athens has the lowest tax rate in the town, because year after year after year, we're very conservative. I want to hear how this cap is going to work. Also, I bet practically every budget in this county was passed by a supermajority. And probably everybody in this county tried to keep their tax levy increases below 3%. Some of them probably couldn't, but most of them probably did. And probably all those budgets were passed by a supermajority. So I don't think there's going to be any problem with towns in Greene County increasing their tax levy by 3 or 4% if they have to, and doing it with a supermajority. So is the state really counting on this to result in a 2% cap? Because if they are, they're going to be surprised. So I'm wondering how it works in the entire state's, you know, plan.
Thanks, Lee. We've had significant cuts over the last 2 or 3 years, and let me give you one. Our jail. At one time, we used to get paid for an inmate. And how much was that, Sheriff, a day for state-ready inmates? $35 a day? $40? I mean, it only costs us $100 to keep them outside of our facility a day. But they were giving us that kind of money for the time that they were ready, up in time till they got transferred. Well, the state come along, and I'm not blaming you gentlemen, but the state come along and said, guess what? You have to hold them for 10 days and we're not giving you any money. Am I right? Our probation department, they have to fulfill many things under the state law. And at one time, they used to get 50 to 60% funding, and you're down, Alan, to what? 17, 15?
It used to be in the books that there were to fund up to 50%. The best I ever know in my now 30 years in the department is 46.5%, and it's down closer to 13, and they also changed it to a block grant effective last June. And the talk is that probation may be zero right out of the governor's budget and be left totally as a local responsibility. And in our case, that would be somewhere in the range of $100,000 or so for the loss.
All right, is there anybody from any of the municipalities or the legislature that would want to make some comments? Chris.
A couple of other things. I've been reading a lot of information about the recommended changes in the mandates and the some of the commission's reports and so on and so forth, but there's a theme that runs through a lot of it, and that is that people are looking for more local control on some of these issues and on some of these programs. You know, they're saying, fine, you're dumping all the costs on us, but you're not allowing us to make any of the rules or to carry out any of the our recommendations. And we're dealing with these things on a direct basis, whereas up in Albany, you're a lot further away from the issue and from the problems that we face every day. So that was a theme that seemed to go through a lot of these things. And in conjunction with that, something like the staffing at the county jail. I mean, wouldn't you think that the sheriff and his staff would be the best people to make a judgment as to what the staffing level should be at the county jail? Well, granted, there's certain things, certain base elements that should be there in any case, but as far as establishing the staffing, they're not going to set themselves up to have a situation that's totally unsafe. They're going to do the right thing and protect their employees and protect the inmates. So why shouldn't they have that authority to do that? I mean, that's just one example out of probably 1,000. But they don't. I mean, those staffing levels are mandated, and it causes a considerable expense. Another quick comment on the caps themselves, and again, like Lee said, I mean, it'd be interesting to hear the details of what the cap as passed by the Senate includes, and right now it seems to be stalled in the Assembly, which is a whole other problem. But I'd like to say that it feels to me like the cap is just a way to pass off some of the state's responsibilities to the communities to kind of deflect the real rabid concerns that people had about state spending and state budgets and kind of blame the local municipalities for them. The local government efficiency grants are kind of another way to say, you know, this is a local problem, you know. This isn't a state problem. This is more of a local problem. And quite frankly, I take exception to that. I think we run our local governments at least as well as the state, if not a lot better. So, anyway, a couple of comments. Thank you.
Comments. We're going just outside of our agenda for a brief time. I want to, Ms. Kelly? Pardon?
Kelly Fagan.
She's an advocate for early childhood intervention, and I know that you have a lot of people here that come to hear you make a comment to our representatives, and I'm going to allow you a brief period of time to lobby your cause.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Senator Stewart and Assemblywoman Lopez and Assemblywoman McLaughlin. And it's nice to see all our town superintendents and mayors here because you talk about services given in return for your tax dollars. And one of the most effective programs in this county is that's been successful is the Early Intervention Program. It's a successful program addressing problems early on during the critical periods of development from birth to 3. We get children who are right out of the NICU into our services. We work with them in the homes, and we also have agencies that provide services as well. But we work with the families in the homes to help their children walk, talk, be able to eat independently. I have a poster here you guys can check out later on, a family in our county of one of our success stories of a child who at 7 months old came home from the hospital. He was tube fed for 17 hours a day, significant disabilities, was not expected to live, had problems with his lungs, problems with his kidneys. Overall, really bleak picture. Our team got in there, and we worked with him, and this is him today. He is now eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, eating regular food. He's talking, he's walking, he's playing on his playground, and he's going to be going into one of our districts, kindergartens in the fall of this year. So that shows just one of the many, many successful stories we have in early intervention of getting there and getting there early on and providing an effective program that's efficient as well. The costs are only for face-to-face time with the child. Doesn't pay for travel. It doesn't pay when the child is absent. It's only the face-to-face time that the costs are. There's also been we talked about cost-benefit analysis. The Journal of American Medical Association did a study for every dollar spent in early intervention is $7.10 saved in future education costs. So the work that we do saves in our future school district budgets and lowers the cost. This child who had a bleak picture could have been in a wheelchair for the rest of his life, could have been tube-fed for the rest of his life, could have been a severe child meeting severe needs for the rest of his life. Now he's prepared to go to kindergarten. Hopefully he will be a working member of our community later on in life, that he will not need help from the system later on. So the money that we spend in early intervention is money well spent. Right now, currently, the rates of early intervention are lower than they were 15 years ago. Last year, the commissioner of the Department of Health gave us 8 days notice, and our rates were cut by 10%. This year, Governor Cuomo's budget, he's doing a broad sweep for everybody of 10% across the board, but that hits us again. So we're getting a 20% decrease in funding for early intervention. The 10% has hit us hard already. We're feeling it. We've had a loss of providers. Claudia Sedges is here to speak about agencies, and the agencies are struggling to make payrolls. Now, agencies provide home-based, and they provide a center for the child to go to prepare them for preschool, to prepare them for a group environment, to prepare them to get ready to go to kindergarten and function in amongst their peers. So it's important to have agencies, and we have very few, and we're losing providers in this county. They're no longer providing services in the county because the rates have dropped. That's then reciprocating already. We're seeing families are receiving less services. If this child was coming into EI this year, a lot of the times we're getting referrals of one-time-a-week services. For one time a week, I go in, and then the next time the kid might not even know me next week. I have to redo my work with that child. I specialize in feeding as well. Child with feeding needs more intensive services to get them off tube feeding, to get them functioning more independently. So it's important to really put the money where things count. And the effects of these cuts are going to reciprocate down the line. They're going to reciprocate with the increased school district costs, spreading the services too thin. You're going to have higher costs with children coming to kindergarten with higher amounts of disabilities. We talked about juvenile detention systems. You know, that's all going to lead up to more cost in the future. So I also, in the March 3rd proposals from the Governor Cuomo, I wanted to mention his new proposal. There's also now Medicaid limits on speech, PT, and OT to 20 visits per year. This is for people, this is for adults, maybe in our public health. Our public health also provides OT and PT and speech through the county as well. So people with strokes or head injuries, they're given an arbitrary number of 20 visits per year. To associate that to our Senator Gabrielle Giffords in Arizona, she would have ended her treatment February 20th, just when she's just getting started at being successful. It would be cut off for her. So that's something to think about with our elderly in the county, with the other members, that we want them to have the services so they can be independent, so they can be out there spending their money in our local economy, keeping up their house so that we don't have to worry about their property taxes, you know, making our property look bad. So I am imploring you guys to commit to wise choices and invest in the areas that make the biggest impact. And I'd like to give a little time to Claudia Stedgers, who is part of an agency, and also Nicole Lansing, who is a parent who has two children.
I have an agency, actually two, Partnership for Education.
You're going to have to speak up, please.
Which serves children with disabilities, birth to five, and we serve Greene County, along with Ulster and Columbia County. A 20% cut is pretty significant. We've already
had a 10% cut. At this point, we're losing two therapists to move on to school districts who can pay more, and they're not looking at cuts there yet, but they will be. Regardless of if we're an individual or an agency, parents come first, children come first. We are the first ones in the home. We are educating parents about disabilities, about their child's disabilities. We're giving them hope. The rate that we get is a fee for service, and it pays for everything. If a child is absent, we don't get paid. If a therapist is absent, we don't get paid. This includes gas, mileage, supplies, liability, insurance, rent, our training, because we all have to go and be trained a lot. So these are very important things, including our retirement and our health benefits. So when you look at that, we've had a 10% cut already. Our rates are lower than they actually were when early intervention started. I can't remember, in the early 90s. Gas has gone up by 200-300%. We go all over the county to provide these services. And what we're doing is ensuring that these children are future taxpayers and not tax burdens, which they will be if our services are cut.
Thank you. Okay, that's the time I'm going to allot, because we did go out. We did go outside of what we were going to do, and I know you put an effort to get representatives here, and you had a chance to give the ear, but we need to move on because we have to.
If you could let folks know we'll be available after.
They said they'll be available, that you can have eye-to-eye contact with them right after we're complete, because we have not heard from our representatives. One final thing that I want to have you put on your agenda. Greene County went to an ALS system 3 years ago. I guess maybe it's been longer than that. It'll be 5 years this year.
That's where our funding level increased.
Pardon?
That's where our funding level increased. We've been about 10 years.
Right. So we went to ALS. My understanding, as the law is written, that those that have rescue squads can bill for the EMS call, but if ALS goes to the call, they're not authorized to get refunds or charge the insurance company. Am I correct in that?
The county has no
ability to recoup money for ALS services. In other words, ALS, when they go to a call, they can't do a separate bill out for their call. And that's something that we probably need to look at on a statewide to give them the authorization to do that. With that, one last scan. And Mr. O'Connor, you're going to plow all the roads in Greene County starting tonight. With that, I think it's time. Do you have enough information there or questions that you need to answer? Listen, he's been a friend of Greene County for many, many years, our Senator Stewart.
Well, thank you very much, Wayne. First of all, I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for convening this summit this evening, and I want to thank all of you for participating. I know you have the entire Greene County State Legislative Delegation here tonight, even though we're in session today and will be again tomorrow, but it was important to be here tonight. I just want to say we're about 9 weeks into the new year. And in a lot of ways at the state capitol, this has been a year of new beginnings. We have a new governor, a new administration. You know, we in the Senate are still confirming a number of new appointees. We did four commissioners yesterday, in fact. We have a new majority in the state Senate. With all of that, we are working toward trying to do business in the state of New York in some new ways. And part of that, it seems to me, an important part of that would be to strike a new, improved relationship between the state and local governments and school districts. Particularly in these difficult times, try to get through these without, for example, as we've heard so often, the state just pushing the problem down on the backs of local governments and local taxpayers. And you know, let's face it, we're all facing huge challenges. I mean, it's no easier at the state capitol. I've been involved in all day in meetings up there, and believe me, the news isn't any better. And to come here tonight, we're all facing challenges, but I'm like Wayne here. I'm optimistic because with every challenge comes an opportunity perhaps to make some changes in this state that in good times are not, shall we say, politically possible. So we do have some opportunities before us. And I want to join in commending, the governor. I don't always agree with him. But I want to commend him for his budget proposal. It was harsh, but I think realistic in these difficult times. But we're legislators, and the governor proposes and the legislature disposes in working with the governor. We're not going to pass the governor's budget. I'm speaking for the Senate at this point. We're not going to pass the governor's budget as he's given it to us. Maybe the general framework, yes, but a lot of changes will occur over the next few weeks as we approach April 1st. But I want to commend the governor for he has had this Medicaid redesign team that we call MRT. Medicaid, it costs New York State $1 billion every single week, and it's unsustainable in terms of the growth in that program. This redesign team has given us their report. They're looking at about $2.3 billion in savings. We are continuing to digest that and to work on that in terms of what our response is going to be. This mandate, the relief team, they issued their report just last week. Quite frankly, I found it to be disappointing and anemic. Because we're facing a financial crisis right now, this year, and much of the mandate relief team report, it's years off in terms of generating savings. So there's a lot more, in my mind, to do in the area of mandate relief, and a lot quicker than what the team thus far. I mean, I think they've laid a great foundation, but it's not providing immediate relief, and that's something that we need to work on. A number of issues, you brought up, but before I get to that, I just wanted to talk about process in terms of our state budget. Next week, I think on the 15th, we in the Senate are scheduled, and I assume the Assembly has the same timetable under our budget reform law that we didn't follow it the last 2 years, or those in charge did not follow it. We are following our budget reform law this year, and which calls next Wednesday, I believe it is, March 15th, we're going to pass a version of a budget in the Senate. Both houses are scheduled to do that, or at least the framework of a budget. And then between March 15th and the end of the month, we will be convening conference committees made up of legislators, senators, assemblymen, meeting in public sessions I think there are 9 or 10 of them, to iron out the differences in the budgets and, of course, work very closely with the governor as well to come up with a final package by the end of March. You know, there are a lot of issues floating around, and many of them have brought up here this evening. The tax cap, if the governor was here, he'd say, he campaigned on this and he won in a landslide. I mean, this is the public wants a property tax cap. And we in the Senate passed the governor's bill a few weeks ago. And also with that, a number of mandate relief measures, one that prospectively saying no more unfunded mandates, but also that was before the mandate relief team had given its report. We put a lot of stock in what they were doing, but no question, as the charts up here indicated, the tax cap does not work without helping local governments and school districts deal with the expenditure side of the equation to help you stay below any problems that may develop from a tax cap. So that has to be part of the equation is meaningful mandate relief. And also, what is the tax cap going to look like? What's going to be included? What expenditures are going to be included under the cap? Is it going to include pension costs, health insurance costs, those types of expenses? Or is it going to just include more discretionary expenses on the part of local governments? Those questions are still open. It'll be the subject of negotiations with the Senate, the Assembly, and the governor. So there's a lot of there's still a lot of unanswered questions when it comes to the property tax cap. On the pension issue, no question that is, we didn't hear about this when the contributions were close to zero a few years ago, but now, of course, they've spiked up, and everyone obviously is struggling with this question. The real savings for local governments obviously are in the payroll workforce expense area, and including pensions. The Constitution does protect the actual benefits for existing employees and pensioners. They cannot be adjusted, the benefit level. We are, as we did a few years ago, did away with the contributions. We can't adjust the contribution level of employees, and that's obviously something that may have to occur. I have felt that the measures have to be taken to avoid these spikes, these peaks and valleys that we've seen in the pension costs, you know, for local governments. We need to level out those expenditures. And in an advantageous way, you know, to spread out those payments, not as Wayne had described as what has been offered in the past, which is really just digging a big hole for local governments. But obviously, that's something that we need to look at. In the health insurance area, some would say we should make the state health insurance program open to local governments and school districts. In some cases, particularly in the school district area, the benefits are less generous than they are currently under contracts. But ways to increase the pool and bring down the costs. I think it was Susan mentioned what's happened going on over in Tompkins County. I worked with the Tompkins County officials with the insurance department to work out some of the difficulties they were having in setting up that consortium. We finally got those issues resolved, and that is being a successful first year of a successful program in that county. That's something that needs to be, I think, explored. Expanding the pool, and once again, adjusting what employees contribute to their own health insurance. The community college base aid has been brought up. You know, I'm serving on three different budget subcommittees in the Senate, one of which is higher education. One of our priorities, if we can find the money and rearrange other priorities, is to mitigate some of those base aid cuts for the community colleges. Because as Joe mentioned, particularly in these times of slower economy, the demand of enrollment is up, at the same time, you know, some of the resources are down, and so that needs to be addressed. Other issues, the tri-borough law, you know, the whole idea there was to, when there's a no contract in place, was to equalize and level off the, so no, neither side has an advantage not to settle. But the, over because of court decisions, that's gotten a little more than a little lopsided. It's no longer a level playing field. Certainly, I don't look to see a repeal of tri-borough, but it needs to be equalized once again. I've supported Wick's law repeal several times. The early intervention program, we appreciated the presentation there. No question, I mean, I'm not an expert here, but it just totally makes sense. If you deal with problems that kids have at a very early age, you can deal with those much easier and much more successfully than letting them than waiting, and I think less expensively as well. So you made a great case there. So there are a lot of issues floating about in our Senate budget. We are, as we look over the governor's proposal, there are some cost shifts from the state down to particularly the counties, and we are at every opportunity trying to back out those cost shifts because at a time when we're concerned about local property taxes, it's totally contrary to where we need to go to shift more burdens on the backs of local governments, and we're looking to provide relief, not additional burden. So that's our general philosophy going forward, even in these tough times. Yeah, but the buzzwords around you know, are obviously spending cuts, and there is going to be pain in this budget. We're just trying to what spending we do are able to do. We need to spend smarter and be fair and equitable in terms of any spending cuts, taxes, property tax relief in particular, and jobs. We need to get through this with an eye toward growing our economy, particularly the upstate region, because the only way we're going to get out of this is through a growing economy and more job opportunities for people. That is the real answer here. Otherwise, we're going to be back here year after year fighting over slices of a shrinking pie. We need to have that pie grow through a healthier economy. And we've got to have to keep that in mind as well. So with that, at the appropriate time, I'd be happy after the program to answer any questions. And I look forward to hearing from my colleagues as well, as we very much appreciate your comments here tonight and your presence here tonight. Thanks again.
You know, I failed to introduce all of you to our new county administrator. I know many of you haven't had the opportunity to meet him yet. His name is Sean Groden. He joined us in January. I'm sure you're going to see his face from time to time in your communities. He's a resource to you as well as he is to us as legislators. Sean? Look, Senator, I didn't call this summit. I did it because I was ordered by my colleagues to do it.
Okay.
This was an equal decision we made that we would hold some type of forum like this to move forward. So credit deserves to all my colleagues that are sitting here tonight.
Great.
And with that, Assemblyman Lopez.
Just talk. Well, folks, I want to thank you for having us join you. And I do want to say that as we make our life journeys, we have different experience that we bring to the table. I served as a local official myself for over a decade. I was a trustee, village trustee. I was a town councilman. I was a county legislator, county clerk. And I can tell you that from that experience, I know how difficult the job is. And as I calculated my wage when I was town supervisor slash county legislator in Schoharie County, I can tell you that my wage was less than ag minimum wage. And I know many of you are working as volunteers, really, in essence. You're paid a stipend or a salary. But the hours that you put in are in no way reflected by the salary or the benefits that you may take out. And so with that said, I understand. And I know that as we talk about local governments, towns, villages, counties, much of it is volunteer-driven. The other piece, and this is something I recognize too, I was chairman of the Human Services Coordinating Council as a county legislator. You're also the very vehicle that the state relies on to deliver most of the services. So whether it's social services or workforce training or aging services, the state controls, but the state requests and requires that the counties be the providers. I went out with Marie to see public health nurses at work. I understand the sensitivity and the intimacy of the services that are provided. You can't put dollar figures on that because the aspect of providing that service or not hinges on the county's ability to be effectively in the field. So we realize, and I realize as your partner, that we can't just stand here with a broad brush and paint a picture. But there is a big picture, and I just want to highlight this quickly, if I may. And this issue has been coming. It's not new news to any of us, state, local, federal. And really, when you think about it, the issue is sustainability. Can we sustain ourselves as a community? Can we meet the needs, respectfully, of the people who live in this community? Can we provide an economic framework also that allows us to live and grow as a society? Green County is working to do that. Whether it's an economic development or being cost-effective, we know that you're trying. Some of this is beyond all of our control. And none of us wanted to be in a recession. So Governor Patterson a few years ago said a storm's coming. Wall Street revenues had dried up by 20%. In his budget message, Governor Patterson's budget message, I sat there with my colleagues as they played with their PDAs and were bored and distracted. He said, by the way, folks, revenues have dropped. Unemployment, sustained unemployment, 9% or higher, won't be returning to prior levels to 2013-2014. Revenues will not be coming back till 2013-2014. Be prepared, folks. Stimulus money drying up. We knew that was coming. And the whole prediction was, at that point, we would fall over a cliff. So, in all fairness, what did the state do? Well, we raised taxes and fees by $10 billion. I say we, collective leadership. Okay, we did not make preparations for changes in how we do business. So, effectively, where we are now in free fall is a reflection of inaction. And that inaction, really a function of society as a whole being in a mode of business as usual. We don't want to change unless change is forced on us. And that's really where we are now. Change is being forced on us as a society. Question is, how do we intelligently deal with it? And I have to say, this governor is trying to do the right thing. He said, I want to do two things. I want to stabilize the state. I want to prevent deficits from recurring. I don't want to be back in a position, and I'm paraphrasing, of telling schools, we're going to give you mid-year cuts, of holding back on contracts to human service providers because they don't have the cash flow. They're writing checks that they can't pay for. That's what he's trying to accomplish. And I give him all the credit in the world for doing that. You can't imagine the waves of interests and people who are coming to Albany. You can. Human services, aging, affordable housing, roads and bridges. The needs are endless. Our frustration is the revenues are not. And that, my concern is in the short term, we have this issue with the recession. My concern is long term, where are we headed? As revenues go to China, manufacturing goes to China, as we spend money in the Mideast, those dollars don't return to our economy. Senator spoke about a shrinking pie. My concern is, are we prepared as a society to deal with scarcity? And I think to date we have not been, because we're used to relative abundance. And every household's different. So really, as we look at that, Governor says, let's stabilize. All right? And he wants, and in some essence, he's right to the effect of keeping pressure, because when you think about it, no one wants to change if they're comfortable with what they're doing. So his whole premise is, I'm going to put, and I say I, the governor, the state, is going to put pressure for reform, because absent the pressure, no one will come to the table. So he's kept the reforms separate from the budget. He tells us reforms are coming. and they'll be presented to the legislature in full measure as we go through session. That's his promise. He said he wants to do year one, stabilize. Then come back, and like peeling back the layers of an onion, get back into the things in more depth. What are the unfunded mandates? What are the things that are driving costs? Medicaid, 15-20%. Counties were capped. The state still bears a responsibility of 20. In 2008, a CEO from a hospital said, by the way, Pete, Medicaid grew by 20%, $8 billion growth in 1 year. Senator talked about $1 billion a week. So now you add $8 billion a year on top of that. Half of our budget, I say our budget, the state budget, is Medicaid alone. Just like I would dare say half of your property tax dollar for counties is Medicaid. All right, so as that grows uncontrollably, it squeezes everything else out. Roads and bridges, all these other things that we support in education are all squeezed out by uncontrollable growth in certain sectors. So that's part of our challenge, is how do we arrest the growth that is pushing other issues to the side, even as the economy is struggling. So as we move forward on that issue of property tax and the tax cap, people have said to me, why is this even coming to the table? Well, all of us know the answer. And here's an anecdote just coming to my office. Pete, I lost my job. Pete, I've lost my home. Pete, my business is failing. Pete, my dairy farm is failing. Help us. We can't stay in our homes. I'm a senior. We haven't seen Social Security increase. I have no pension. I have no retirement. I can't stay in my home. That's what's driving it. So at the basis, it's an emotional appeal, a cry for help from our neighbors. That's what it represents. And it's not local governments that are at fault. It's not the state that at fault. It's not the federal government that's at fault. We all have a collective responsibility of over time. This didn't happen overnight. Of increasing programs, increasing the government's role in our lives, so that the point that we're at now, when you take New York State taxes and add property taxes, we're the highest in the nation. So when people get to the end of that equation, they say, well, why should I stay? So I'm going to take my business and leave. Or when I retire, I'm going to leave. Or as soon as I have a chance, I can't find a job, I'm going to leave. That's what's driving this tax cap issue. It's not that anyone's a bad person or that there are villains out there. That's not true. But that's what's driving it. So it's an emotional issue. So on the tax cap, it has life because it has life with our neighbors across Greene County and elsewhere. Can't do it realistically, though, unless you attack the things driving costs. So just to put a cap on and say, job all done, well, you might as well be the little Dutch boy with the finger in the dike, because the water's still coming. At some point, you'll get tired of keeping your finger in the dike, or the dike will just collapse from the weight of the pressure behind it. So the premise is we have to help with unfunded or underfunded mandates. There's a shade of gray there, but it's realistic as well. In my mind, regulatory flexibility. We should be giving you more tools. And I'm going to pull Sally Sharkey as an example. Sally wants to put a biomass facility in Durham to cut her energy costs and to stimulate local forest economy. State education is blocking her. 2 hours away in the other part of my district, 7 counties, 1,000 miles a day as I drive. Afton-Bainbridge wants to merge a bus garage and a highway and a town barn. State education is blocking them. Why? Why aren't we giving you more tools and more flexibility? That should be part of our job too. So the property tax cap should also come with mandate relief, more tools for you to do your jobs more effectively, more discretion, as we heard, to allow you to decide your own outcomes. That's what we should be doing. So when we talk about tax cuts that are shifted, it's not a cut at the state level. We shift it and give it to you. So Senator's absolutely right. We have to arrest that, nip it in the bud before it goes forward. So as we move forward, it's my belief, and I can say this from where I've been and where I've served, we can always do something better. We can always find more efficient ways to do it, but we have to have a collective will. So each of you are decision makers in your own right. Each of you have had discretion to raise or lower services, increase budgets, but there has to be a collective responsibility. I accept responsibility as a state legislator. I'm your partner. So our goal is to be in communication. What can we do to give you more tools? How can we address unfunded, underfunded mandates? How can we help you keep growing the economy so that that rising tide floats all boats? So that's really our obligation to you as a state legislator. Back to our partners here. I know you guys work tirelessly. And as I say, no one's here I don't think anyone can vilify or diminish the efforts of any of our public servants here. The question is, and Vinny was right on point, is where do we go from here? And at what pace do we make these changes? The property tax cap has nothing to do with the state budget. That has its own life. So there's nothing that prevents us from having a more intelligent conversation on that issue and deciding how do we arm you locally to get ready for that, if in fact that's what happens if a cap is imposed. So that has a separate life, and I think that needs to be clear. Now, the headlong rush is really coming as a result of the emotional response from our neighbors who are struggling. So, points well taken. This is just a part of a dialogue. We're not here just for a 15-minute or two-hour discussion. We're here as your partners, and we have a long-term obligation. So I look forward to it. Thank you.
One more reminder. Anybody that didn't get a copy of the mandate relief report, it's here. How do you like your job,
I love it.
How's the first 2 months been?
Great.
Good.
Speedy,
well,
I do have to say, Speedy, we're sitting here, and Steve leans over and says, Pete, it's getting a little warm in here.
Yeah.
So that's why our coats are up, but I said that's by design.
Yeah.
And it's cold out, too. Wait till summer comes. Anyway, Assemblyman McLaughlin.
Thank you, everybody, and thank you, Wayne, for showing me what you think a small crowd is. You said, there's just going to be a few people there, but I applaud everybody for coming out and taking the time. This was a great thrill, actually, to walk in and see this many people. I actually thought it was just going to be the legislature, so this is really great that everybody took the time to come out, and it shows how much caring there is in each one of these towns. For me, as the new guy, I may come at it from a little different perspective because I haven't seen what the senator and assemblyman have seen up there in Albany, and I come at it from a real business perspective. So, and I tend to be a little bit blunt, so forgive me. I can tell you this, that as the new guy coming in, I also applaud the governor, very supportive of what he's doing. It isn't perfect, but he's off to a great start. We have to make tough choices, and I think that really what we're seeing now is the bill coming due for a decades-long party that we've been having in this state. That's the truth. We've overspent way too much money, and we've been kind of ill-served, not by any individual particular legislator or assemblyman, senator, governor. On the whole, as New Yorkers, we've been ill-served. I mean, if this was a business, the executive team would have been fired a long time ago because there was no accountability. You just spend, spend, spend. It's easy to do when the money keeps rolling in. It's easy to keep spending money. It's difficult to say no, but that's the position that we're in right now. And every town I go to, I live up in Scaghtikoke in Rensselaer County, and it's the same thing all the way up and down the river. Every town supervisor, every county executive, feeling the pain, doing their absolute best. The highway superintendents, the school superintendents, all doing their absolute best. But we have a public out there screaming for relief. And I think that where we are is with this tax cap discussion, it's really the first step. We have to have mandate relief, but the governor, I think, is doing it the right way as far as tax cap first, force the hard choices. I do believe that he is pushing stuff down to the county level, and maybe that's a good thing, given the counties more authority to make the decisions. I think that may be what's coming, where he says, if you want this, you have to figure out a way to pay for it. And that's painful at the county level. But I believe, and I think he said this to people when we had breakfast with him, I'm paraphrasing, but he kind of said, you know, I think that in a lot of cases they're going to override the cap anyway, because the parents are the ones that show up to vote on the school budgets and things like that. So I think he thinks that the counties are going to decide on their own, we want these services, we're going to pay for it, and here's how we're going to do it. And Wayne, you're in a situation here, I was adding up the numbers, you can raise about $400,000 with a tax cap, you need to raise about $3 million, right? That's just next year. What do you do in 2012, 2013? And as Pete alluded to, people leaving the state in droves, it piles more and more onto the rest of us that stay, and the costs keep going and going and going. So there aren't any easy answers, but just a couple of things.
You know, we all know this, but New York with the highest taxes in the nation, not only the highest, but 79% above the national average. It's just not sustainable over the short run or the long run to be that high. Businesses leaving the state. I had a friend of mine who was trying to volunteer for my campaign. Couldn't do it because her husband lost his job, not because the company went out of business. It went to Tennessee. So, and that's not an isolated incident. It's small businesses, large businesses, Tom Golisano, billionaires leaving, millionaires leaving, middle-class families leaving. It's a state in decline because of years and years of overspending. It's the truth of the matter. Median property taxes, 96% above the national average. Ridiculous. And property tax levies from 98 to 08, 10 years, grew by 73%. Difficult choices. I don't want to kind of go on and on because I would just be reiterating what the Senator and Pete said. But just know that we're there to help as much as we can. There's a lot of things in this budget that I see, like early intervention, penny wise, pound foolish. You cut it now, you hurt yourself 2 or 3 years down. Way worse than the benefit, the short-term so-called benefit you're going to get right now. I see that a lot. I visited a lot of the ARC facilities and a lot of the group homes. You start cutting things like that, you are really going to put some pain onto people in a very short time. And if we pass a tax cap, which I hope we will, the Senate did their job, I think, and passed it. We haven't seen it on the floor yet of the Assembly. But if we pass a tax cap and don't come through with some kind of mandate relief, we are not doing our job. It's just, we're just passing the buck on to you. And I'm not willing to do that. And truth of the matter is, we're going to vote on a budget shortly. No matter which way we vote, you can get your head handed to you. You can vote no, and people say you should have voted yes because it does this. You can vote yes, and people say you should have voted no. So that's the difficulty. We're okay. We can deal with all that. But I think the message from us is we're here to help. We're here to listen. Thank you so much for coming out tonight. It shows how much commitment there is to this community. And I'm very proud to be up there. Even though it's difficult, I'm very, very honored to be up there representing the people of Coxsackie and New Baltimore. Pete and I view this, certainly the Senator has the whole county, but Pete and I view this as we really share the whole county. So whatever we can do to help, we're accessible. You can see that we're here. It will stay as long as we need to. Just know that we're there to help. And we'll, I think the message is we're all in this together. Let's get through it together. And thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Where do we go from here, Vinny?
Exactly. You need to keep the pressure on.
We're actually meeting tomorrow night as a legislative body, and I think that we'll be discussing that as part of our plan of how we, because I know that many of us talk many times of what do we need to do to work better with our towns and our villages. Though I think we do a good job, there's always room for improvement, and we need to build upon that, because we are all in this together. I certainly am optimistic, and I know all of us are optimistic, even though it's challenging, and there's some tough decisions, and some real tough decisions we have to make. This is a great turnout, and I am so appreciative that our town representative has showed up, because it's a good start to what we hope will be a great ending. Thanks, everybody, for coming. Thanks for the intervention group. You had your say. You got some recognition. We did it. And remember, they're going to stay afterwards. Thank you, gentlemen, for... I know Pete personally made a switch of his schedule that he had for tonight because he thought it that important to be here. But we know that you got some severe decisions to make. Your decisions are equally as hard as our decisions. And to come down here at a time when you're under the gun for the next 2 or 3 weeks, everybody in this county appreciates it. Thanks a lot.
All right, that's the end here.
They didn't get a book. There's something up here.
That's the end here of the Greene County meeting, WJXC's coverage of this special Greene County meeting tonight from the Greene County Emergency Services Building in Cairo. you've been listening. I think Dharma Daly is going to take over now, if she hasn't already, and play some music until 9:30 when we have another live broadcast, this one from New York City.
I'm